less rain than that, and it's been proven out there for years.
Well, it seems like you are also talking about reusing the water, that there's no more wastewater. You might be able to actually live on the amount of water.
That's a good lead into where we're going. And then she was saying a statement, well, if you use your wastewater, reuse it, that should allow you to live off of the water that you need for drinking, right? And that you're not going to waste that water on other things that you don't need. Drinking water quality. Oh, I didn't say the last. The other prerequisite is 100% of stormwater and building water discharge must be handled on site. So that actually kind of overflows into the site prerequisites too, but what we try to do is collect and reuse everything on site, put it back on site or infiltrate it back into the ground. So this is a design principle sheet that we've used. I developed this probably 3 years ago. We've been involved with dozens of LEED projects around different parts of the state, and after you've been working with LEED for a while, you can figure out, you know, what are the principles you would use that would give you all the points in the water criterias. And they boil down to, first, of course, is looking at nature and doing natural systems. Now, I've kind of tweaked this to be part of a living building system, but we're also looking at not just the water, but the nutrients that are in the water related to water. Okay. Number two, you don't use any drinking water to flush toilets. So there's two ways we can look at this. The first would be to use reclaimed water or untreated rainwater to flush toilets. But the best way, which can get you down to the zero energy level, is we don't use water, any water, to convey our waste. And that's where you're getting into things like waterless urinals, composting toilets. Three, we're going to reuse all our water sources that we've used and impacted by what we've done. We're going to, of course, inherent to all these systems is very high efficiency water conserving fixtures. Five, we're going to reuse all that water and nutrients for irrigation of our landscape and food crops, and we'll get into, you know, what we need to do is have our own on-site garden tops and whatever to produce things besides trees and bushes and plants, you know, the whole permaculture kind of idea of the edibles. So number six, we're going to consider energy demands. We're going to look at the water G involved with all those things above. And then we're going to apply those ideas on the appropriate scale. We've done studies, and just take, you guys have probably seen Living Machines. Jason had one in Kansas City that we worked on. That was a building scale with a living machine water recycling system right in the lobby, taking all the wastewater, treating it through a natural system, but that one does have energy, recycling it back for toilet flush and irrigation. Now, a living machine is an example of a system that works good at a larger scale. You wouldn't want to necessarily do that at a residential scale. And there's all technologies you can look at, wind generation, other things. You know, there's an appropriate scale that each of those have, you know, their place. So I lost a piece of my slide here. So the question that we look at is when we're working is, okay, we're going to design something. So what do we look at when, you know, what can I do with this water, you know, after we've used it the first time? You know, if you put your hands under the sink and that water is drinking water, as soon as that water touches your hand, it's now called gray water. In conventional design, it's really called wastewater. But that water could easily be reused for another source. We can take it and separate it and just take it out to irrigate the facilities. Or within a building, we can use it for irrigation. And we could also take it and treat it back to a level of a higher quality and reuse it for something else. But once we use something, we just use it and reuse it. Think about second uses, third uses. The other concepts that we need to think about is when we're looking at the big picture of how our society, particularly in developed world, has been using water. We look at, you know, meeting our needs versus what we're designing for our convenience, and the ideas there, and how far can we push push our living building designs to the general public if they become appearing too archaic or too maintenance intense. But for the range of where we're at right now, and this is based on research we just did this past week, you know, typically people who have to carry their water, you know, they can supply all their basic water needs with about 5 to 10 gallons of water a day. We all need about a gallon to drink, and then we need water to cook and for cleaning, washing. But right now, the average in the United States, Canada, we're at about 150 gallons per person per day on average for residential uses. Canada is beating the United States at 196 gallons per day. And that's, and you compare that to 5-10 is all we really need. So, you know, think about that.
Are you aware of any statistics about the kind of carrying capacity of the world as it relates to those uses by culture or by area?
The carrying capacity of how much water we actually have?
The water that's available versus the uses we have. And there must be some
just in general, you know, what is like 1% of our world's water supply is fresh water, right? And we're really impacting that fresh water partly because of contamination and other things. But, yeah, there's a breaking point. I can't tell you what it is. But intuitively, everybody seems to know that we're there right close to there. And I'm sure there are. I mean, it's amazing, you know, when Paul did his presentation of how many organizations are out there, like, what, 1-2 million in the world tracking this stuff? I'm sure there's probably a couple hundred thousand of them. So how do we get away from convenience besides having a crisis where there's no water coming out of your tap, which has almost happened in some places in the United States over the last few years? There's 30-some states right now in the United States that are under some kind of a drought condition. Now, I'm not somebody cheering crisis to get us to motivate things, but in Australia, they've been under a drought condition over there for about a decade. And a lot of people at this rainwater harvesting conference I went to this last fall were from Australia because they're desperate. They showed us big reservoirs, lakes, that are just little pools at the far end. I mean, that's their water supply for cities. So in their drought crisis condition, they've become very innovative with mandate, because they had mandated, but just like everybody has to collect rainwater off the roof, flush your toilets. You have to use your gray water to irrigate your yard. The basic things that we're trying to deal with our codes and get us there, they're there. They've got the whole industry, plumbing suppliers, everybody's got, I mean, it's a whole market now. And if you want to get really good, efficient water, rainwater, gray water systems, go to Australia, but they've now actually moved an office here in the United States. Some of the companies are now selling their products here. Now, stepping back to kind of give a little history and why we're kind of in the situation we're at, you know, we went from on the left there, and this is probably prior to the 19th century, but it's common, it's still common actually in some parts of our country, Kentucky and some of the other areas. But a zero energy waste handling system is a simple outhouse. And then, like Jason mentioned, you know, the flush toilet came along, and now our whole infrastructure and engineering came along to figure out what to do with all the problem that was creating, and that's where we ended up with pipes hauling it out to the edge of the city, and then that became a problem. In the 70s, we developed the Clean Water Act, which then put a treatment plant at the end of the pipe to kind of make it better before we discharged it. So that's, in a nutshell, where we were and where we are still. But we're looking at what can we do for this century, what can we do now to get into it. So, you know, in general, I'm saying we went from a water, wastewater kind of design to we got to get to water reuse kind of solutions. And they're out there. The left one there is a very simple one. You flush the toilet, you wash your hands, and that water fills the toilet tank. I mean, that's actually a gray water reuse of the water that you're using to flush a toilet. Waterless urinals, I'll get to that one on the right there. That's a urine separation, urine diversion toilet. Front bowl takes number one down. The back bowl takes the number two down. Those things are out there, and I'll show you more of that. So, you know, so I kind of summarized it already, but, you know, we went kind of from zero gallons of water, zero energy handling our waste to 5 gallons. Now we've implemented water conserving codes to get us down to 1.6 or 1.28. California's using now, Oakland, other places. But the efficiency isn't going to get us where we have to go, but it's a piece of it. But good marketing and other things that Jason shared already, which I didn't know he was going to, but here's Thomas Crapper again. The good marketer, he wasn't the inventor. But so we've come along with, these are just some of the things that have happened in the last few decades, but we've come along with very efficient toilets. We've got dual flush toilets. We've got a 1-pint flush toilet we've used in combination with some composting. You've got that toilet up there, 2 tablespoons per flush. It's a foam flush toilet. We got composting toilets, no water, waterless urinals. So the technologies are there. That, and once this really takes off, these can get refined. So I'm going to get into kind of a bigger, you know, farther out. And one of the things you got to do, of course, is you got to take off your hat of what we can do based on regulations. Okay. So this part of the discussion, you got to think of the possibilities. And I'm going to share stuff they're doing in Germany and 67 other countries around the world right now. And it starts with separating our number one and number two at the source. And why do we do that? Well, you can see there the numbers of the nutrients. Our urine waste and our human waste is, unsurprisingly, almost perfectly balanced to what the fertilizer ratio is that we need to put on our crops. And I'm sure that's because we eat, right? And it just passes through. So we got to look at that as a resource, and it's a perfect resource waiting for us. And right now, what we're doing is, with using conventional flush toilets, is we're putting one part of waste into 200 parts of water, flushing it sometimes miles away, and then it takes a lot of time and energy to try to take that one part of waste out of that 200 parts. And most wastewater plants don't take the nutrients out. They just dump that into the streams, and that's why we have problems with algae blooms and, you know, problems with our water sources. But here it is. It's a resource, right? And we're just treating it as a problem.
The cost of fertilizer being as high as it's become, I'm surprised that they're not looking at these treatment facilities to recapture those nutrients. And
he's making the point that there seems to be a lot of value in the nutrients, and you're one slide away. The Germans have been studying this, and Germans are really good at methodically studying issues and problems. But so this is just summarizing again. It's much easier and less costly to separate out the urine at the source rather than to try to deal with it when it's commingled. The other point is, and I've kind of said this already, it's a near ideal fertilizing ratio to use on landscape gardens, other agricultural applications. So, last April, I did a presentation at the Living Futures, and I threw out the idea because I heard it somewhere, and I found one of these urine separation toilets on a website, so I stuck it in my presentation. Well, then this makes sense. The only way I'm going to figure out if this really works is to go there. So I went to Germany last May, and I was able to meet with the EcoSan people at the GTZ. They've got like 10,000 employees. They've got 67 countries. This EcoSan program is working with a lot of Asian countries, African countries. And so they did this presentation or parts of it. And then I did the presentation that I did at the Living Futures Conference. And it's very similar with the concepts, but these guys are ahead of us. You know, they're already out there. And so the Germans are good. I walked away with a whole box of notebook of PowerPoints and everything else because they're out there to share this stuff. You know, that's what we're doing too, I think, is sharing because we can all learn from each other. And just a little plug here, I wrote a newsletter article that's going to be in the EcoSans, their international publication in 12 different languages, including Chinese. So I don't know what Chinese symbols of living buildings look like, but I'll post that to the Cascadia when I see that come by. But it's been really interesting, and you know they're very friendly, and they actually like Americans and Canadians. They very much like what we do. They don't like all our politics. but they really like us. So there's a relationship there. We can work with the Europeans. They have their whole reasons why we should be doing things better. I won't go through it, but it's things that we talk about here. But here again is just a summary. This is what we've been doing in our centralized systems. We pull the water that we're going to use from way up somewhere. We bring it into the buildings, and we discharge it with some treatment back into our water bodies. But a recycling water system takes the rainwater and other sources. We use it. We separate it. And that all those resources that are in that water become part of the cycle, and we produce our food with it, and then we eat that food, and then it's just recycled right within our local area. No disposals in the water bodies. So there's their whole list of why we do this, but you can see water savings potential 90%. Throw the energy savings onto that. Decentralized systems are more cost effective. I mean, simple. This is layperson level. I mean, often when I talk to people, how we design things as engineers, you know, like the detention ponds are the best thing. It's like, have you guys ever seen, you know, this hole in the ground with a chain link fence around it? And they go, yeah. They go, what's that for? It's like, and I explain it to them. They go, you got to be kidding, you know. Anyways, but this is simple stuff. Here's what they're doing. This is in Norway. They're looking at this idea of decentralized system, neighborhood scales, rather than piping and pumping stuff way outside of their communities. They do it by neighborhood, and that's where you have very efficient on-site systems or neighborhood systems. Closing the loop using safe. I mean, health is important, but these can be done health. And there again, this is not waste. It's a resource. Here's a diagram that is similar to something that we could have put together, but it's like, hey, they've already got it figured out. You know, everything is used, treated, reused, food, eat it, recycle the nutrients back. It's all integrated system.
Have you heard anything about marketing resistance? Here there would be a huge educational problem where we have to get over the idea that you can't eat the vegetables off the septic field.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm currently involved in a project where that's exactly what I would like to do with my wastewater. And I can't see, this is a resort project.
Yeah. So to summarize your statement or question is, you know, how to get through the hurdle of convincing others that this is a safe way of doing things. And I think as we develop this, for example, if I was to take wastewater from a septic system, I would only do that in a subsurface irrigation system like a geoflow system, and then I would only use that water on plants that you're going to pick the fruit or something. I wouldn't use it on my carrots and, you know, carrots and potatoes. So here again, I think when we start looking into this, how you would want to reuse that water for irrigation, for some of those vegetables that you might want to use it, you might have to treat that water to a point where it's disinfected with ultraviolet or ozone. But there again, well, you'll see some of the examples they have. I mean, you can take a water through a hydroponic system, and it can come out virtually clean at the end while it's irrigated the plants. Now you've got clean water that you could use for other more sensitive type of plantings.
I'm really perplexed with this problem because we currently have a decentralized system, very high-tech system on this resort, treating black water. And the effluent is cleaner than the water in the creek on the neighboring lot. And of course, I'm prevented from putting the water into the creek. I don't know what regulatory limitations there are of using that water for the bird garden that the chef is going to harvest from. But I know that the relations are the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe there isn't an answer in the short term, but
And you know, part of his question is the dilemma he has because he's treating his water so highly that his wastewater so highly that it really meets water reuse standards, but he's bogged down and really reusing it because of this current codes. But I know there's a perception of water. For example, I know in the Middle East, and I don't know if this is a kind of a religious belief with a lot of the people that live there, but the idea of reusing their wastewater for growing anything in the desert that's food, they're just like, we're not going to do that. So how do you get that, and that's typical of other places where people might be concerned of that. So how do we show and how do we demonstrate a system that's safe for health-wise? And I think perhaps that's taking that water. Well, actually, I would go back and say we're not going to put number two water in the waste stream. Now what we're going to have is urine. We're going to get into number one and number two. But, the pathogens and stuff are basically carried through your number two. And the urine, you've always heard, in Africa they drink their pee, There really isn't the pathogen issue in a number one. And it kind of goes with what Jason said. We've been taught to fear our human waste. So there's obviously the stories and the education has to go back to say, this is safe, or here's how we make sure it's safe, just like we're doing now. Here, just a couple ideas for you guys is that, and the blue is the urine, and this is the amount of nutrients in there. You can see most of the nutrients in human waste is through the number one stream, and the red or maroon there is the number two. Here's the number that you're looking for. So they figured out, and here, step back a little bit, in our world supply of phosphorus, which is being mined, is almost gone. So where are we going to get some of our fertilizers for that we've been getting easily? Well, I think it's going to have to come from what we've used and reuse it wisely. But they figured out if you look at how much fertilizer value is in everything that we're flushing down the toilet, and here's a business venture if anybody wants to get into it, but $15 billion is what they estimated, that value of material that's just being right now wasted. The Germans have been experimenting with ways to take the urine and safely use it in their fields. They've got all kind of pilot projects going. They found that injecting it directly will keep most of the nitrogen in place without, if you sprayed it or something, you would lose some of that. Testing it on a kind of a commercial scale. Now they've also gone third world with it. Here's a good flow diagram from the Germans, and this is the technology piece. And this is like, there's all kind of systems out there right now that can be used to do some of these things. And once there's an effort in the industries and engineering, we'll take this and we'll make it really efficient. But for different types of waste streams, there's different types of systems, and some of those overlap. Now, if you put this in place in a building, this is in a project in Europe, I think in Germany, but now you've got, see how they've separated out their waste, they store it differently, and then each of those stored waste water streams are then reused appropriately. What I found in Germany, which was kind of interesting, because in the United States and in Hawaii, for example, there's 60,000 people that live off of rainwater. Rainwater harvesting is very common in some places in the United States. In South Ohio and Kentucky, rainwater harvesting is how people get their water. But what I found interesting is they hadn't taken it and implemented it there. So here the Germans are like taking one area of wastewater management, but it hasn't been integrated too far yet with the possibility of supplying the whole building with water. How do they handle PC? The pharmaceuticals? That's part of their studies, because that is a big issue, Are those pharmaceuticals that are passing through a body, when they get out into the fields, how are those getting broken down? Now, intuitively, I would say they're in a natural system. If there's any place that they're going to get broken down safely, it'll be in the earth, in the soil, in the natural biology that exists there with the microbes. But that's one of the biggest concerns of water reuse, even on centralized systems, is that there's all kind of pharmaceuticals passing through our bodies that are ending up in the wastewater stream. And so when you try to reclaim the water, that stuff is still in there. And that's become a big issue, and a lot of reasons why reclaimed water, I think, in our states really hasn't gone too far. Because when you're in public systems, and that issue comes up, things just kind of shut down. They don't know what to do with it. I think dealing with it on site and learning from some of the studies that are being done around the world, hopefully we'll deal with that, or else everybody, oh, we'll have to get off the drugs. That might be another solution. But that is an issue.
Sort of the other social aspect of this is sort of the crap that we actually ingest, right? That is now going back into these pure systems. It's sort of kind of, in the closed like system, you basically now have to look back at what are the things that we're consuming.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the end product of it, right?
Yeah. So, to summarize, I think what he was saying is if you do recycle water, wastewater, and it goes, is that being the issues of the pharmaceutical, could that be passing through the food we eat, and are we creating another problem, trying to solve another problem? But it is being looked at because it's part of the issue that, especially in developed worlds, I mean, the underdeveloped worlds, most people aren't on drugs.